You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. The show is brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com, and the Teach Well Alliance. Enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm a coach working in schools with leaders and teachers to help them to improve their well-being. On today's episode, I am interviewing Dan Edwards, who is the head teacher of Woodstock Primary Academy in Leicester. Now, I first came across Dan when I found a blog that he'd written on Twitter, and I was absolutely fascinated by it. He talks about how he has gone from couch to 5K running, so from being a complete and utter novice at running, to running ultra marathons. And I think his latest thing is something called 5 in 5, which is crazily 5 marathons in 5 days. But I was absolutely fascinated by Dan's blog about running, because he talks about running in a very spiritual way. He talks about it in a way that he finds that running creates space for him. It helps him to cope with his job, which is obviously extremely busy and demanding. And it allows him to take a breather from what he's doing and get away from the busyness of life. One of the things that I found was interesting is that he talks about how running fills his cup and how it gives him something that nothing else could. So I wanted to interview him for the show just to find out more about how he uses running as a way of improving his well-being, and also as encouragement to any one of you out there listening. If you have ever thought about taking up running and thought, oh no, I really wouldn't be able to do it, I'm not a runner at all, because Dan has gone from not being a runner at all to being a particularly competent runner. I mean, being able to run 5 marathons in 5 days, wow, that's pretty amazing. So I started with his running blog, and then I found quite a few of his other blogs extremely interesting as well. One of them was about the full cup, which Dan will talk to us about. It's quite self-explanatory, but it's really interesting listening to Dan talk about how he keeps his own cup full and how he makes sure that the cups of all his staff are filled as well. He loves a metaphor, Dan, in his blogs. And there was one about repositioning the donuts. So I think you're going to find that particularly interesting when you find out all about Dan and his donuts. And I was really interested to talk to Dan as well, because I read another of his blogs called There Are Stars to Spot. And it's a particularly optimistic blog. And Dan is very optimistic in his outlook. He sees things in a particularly positive way, and his approach to coping with the stresses and the pressures of his job are really practical things that I think you would be able to implement in your role, whatever that might be, in teaching or in leadership in school. One of the things that Dan says in one of his blogs is that only forward mattered. And at this moment in time, that sentiment, I think, is really important. Look into the future and realising that we have to move forward, and that this crisis will at some point come to an end. But have a listen to Dan. I'm sure that you'll get lots of ideas for practical things that you can do to improve your well-being. So enjoy the interview. Dan Edwards, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. It's nice to be able to have a chat.
Excellent. We were just talking there just before we started recording about how it's been quite a quiet Christmas for you for a change.
Yeah, it's been strange, and it's been quite unusual really, because normally the time between Christmas Our new year is very frenetic. We're going to see different family members and moving all around various parts of the country. But this year, although it is does come with some sadness that it's a bit of a restriction rather it is out of choice, it's been quite nice to have that time just to stop and to reflect and just to be in the moment a little bit rather than rushing around. So yeah, although it has been different, there's been some nice things to come out of it. So yeah.
Maybe there's a message in there for us in terms of slowing down and enjoying the moment.
Well, I think, as unfortunately, where certain things of, parts of our leisure activities are closing down, gyms and, shops and those kinds of things that kind of use are a normal distraction. No, they do, when that happens, it only probably enforces us to just think of what we need to do otherwise. And that may be just be spending time with family and friends or just being outside or, yeah, taking pastimes that possibly we'd left behind in the past.
Yeah,
But
I
yeah,
think.
maybe it's a chance to stop and reflect and to do those, have those moments of mindfulness where we can just, realign ourselves ready for the new
Yeah,
year.
I think it's just what teachers and school leaders have needed after a frenetic term. So, would you like to introduce yourself to us, and
Yeah,
just
that'd be a
tell the
pleasure.
listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do now and how you've ended up there?
Yeah, well, my name's Dan Edwards, and I'm the proud principal of Woodstock Primary Academy. And we're a large primary school in the heart of Leicester City. And we're a part of a multi-academy trust called the Learning Without Limits Academy Trust. And I've been in my current role for just under 3 years. Prior to that, I was a primary school teacher. I mean, obviously, I was in the senior leadership team of a primary school, but prior to even stepping foot into a primary school, I taught in secondary school for
Wow.
many years. So I trained as a, I would say, a drama, English and drama teacher, teaching Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4 English and drama. And then I moved into Key Stage 4 and Key Stage 5, teaching A-level theatre studies. I think I taught a little bit of A-level general studies and various other GCSEs along the way. And then after taking a bit of a break from teaching altogether, I kind of refocused into the primary sector, which I have never looked back on since, really. It's just been the best decision I made.
That's really interesting. I mean, I'm a fellow, well, trained in 1997 as an English and drama teacher. Wanted to be a drama teacher originally and thought if I did English, I might have a better chance of getting a job, and then ended up being an English teacher. So we've got that in common. But that's an interesting change, isn't it, to move from secondary into primary. So how did that happen?
I came into teaching quite late, so I managed to. I think I was on the tail end of what was the GTP, which was the Graduate
Oh
Teacher Program,
yeah, I
which
remember that.
was, I think, a skip-based route for those who were over the age of 25. So I came into teaching when I was 28, and I knew previously to starting that I wanted to work in education. Before that, I'd worked in residential social care for children
Right.
who were at risk or were in full-time residential social care. And I knew that, obviously I might have done my degree in drama and wanted to feel that, that was a, possible avenue to pursue. However, I wasn't the best student when I was at school. So I had to undertake quite a lot of GCSE retakes, my maths being one of them. And yeah, and when I was successful in getting that, thanks to a very caring evening school tutor, I then was able to gather a place on the on a GTP, and which I taught English and drama, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. Then continued, like I said, into teaching A-level theatre studies and GCSE drama and expressive arts and all of those things. And then I think it got to about 4 years in, and I'd started to make links with the local primary schools. Because we wanted to develop our primary offer through our A-level study students, giving them some outreach and work experience opportunities. And I just found that actually being in a primary school setting was something that, one, I'd never thought of before because I I had a specialised degree, so I thought that secondary school was the appropriate kind of avenue for my direction, really. But just spending time in various primary settings and looking at early years and looking at Key Stage One, I just felt that there was a real sense of creativity there. And it was about, I think for me, it was about applying my love of drama and love of creativity across a broader range of subjects and looking at how it could unlock the door to literacy or maths or history and those kinds of things.
Oh, you
So
just
I
said
took
something
a.
that maths teachers will hate.
Yeah, I
Maths
know,
and
yeah.
drama. Oh my
Yeah,
goodness. Maths and
strikers.
literacy is bad enough, but maths and drama.
Yeah, so I took some time out. I worked for myself for a while and did a number of projects with a colleague where we worked in school. And at that time, there was a lot of public funding through the Creative Partnerships schemes that was going, which was about
Yeah.
creativity and education and developing an arts offer for schools. So we were lucky to be in receipt of a number of those to lead some projects. And it got to a while where I think, certain funding streams inevitably kind of, dried up and stopped. And I suppose I was forced with the decision really of, where would I want to be? And actually I never really thought that primary school, being a secondary trained teacher, was going to be an offer for me. However, I found a post at the primary school that I attended as a child. And I thought, well, that would be great. I could, try, hopefully convince them that I had enough qualities of, being a teacher, in secondary school, and that I could bring something to the mix, really. And it was a single form entry school, and the head teacher, I think, listened. I think I managed to do a successful interview. I didn't mess up, and I was offered the job, and I never looked back since. And it was an opportunity of teaching subjects that, one, I'd never taught before, teaching maths, teaching geography and a broad range of foundation subjects. But it was just the curiosity and the kind of interest at primary sector that it was just, you felt that you were actually switching on the door, switching on the lights, rather than trying to keep them burning all the
Yeah,
time since
yeah.
secondary school. And I know that sounds, but when you teach probably sometimes like a foundation subject or a non-core subject in secondary school, you do get children who have been either selected it because they wanted to be there or selected it because they had to be there through the constraints of
Yeah.
the timetable.
I sometimes felt like at the end of the day I'd switch the lights off in the high school.
Yeah, I mean, it was very. It was just the idea of, and I'm a great believer, obviously, that education is the most important thing that we can offer children. And actually, if you can get it right at the start, and
Yeah.
make it the most irresistible, the most exciting, and the most beautiful thing that children can interact with, then that should really inspire them to keep going. And as they go through the education sector, that obviously their choices of where they want to find that beauty and that excitement, you've opened the door to them early doors that they know that when they get to 18, they can go, no, I really want to narrow my focus and go from there. So
Yeah.
yeah, and then I was fortunate enough to progress and then ended up in a small but very, exciting multi-academy trust that gave me the opportunity to lead the school. And it was not, it was never going to be a position I was going to, not accept immediately. And having the opportunity to shape a direction and shape a culture and to shape where we are as a school alongside and with, I'm going to say, and with a fantastic team of teachers and staff and parents, most importantly, yeah, I think it's just the best job in the world.
Wow, that's really inspirational.
I can't say anything other than that, really.
I'll just explain why I got you on the why I asked you to come on the podcast because you write blogs, don't you? And I read your blog about running, and I was really it really interested me because you talked about how running fills your cup, and I saw the link between running and well-being and self-care and looking after yourself as a head teacher. And that's really why I wanted to get you on the show so that you could talk about that. Obviously, I've read a few of your blogs since then, and there are lots of interesting things that you talk about and that you're doing at the moment. So can you start us off by telling us about your running journey and how that has contributed to your own well-being, first of all?
Yeah, definitely. So I go back to the point in which I was about to start in the primary sector. So I'd managed to, you know, I'd left probably the realms of self-employment, and I was in this, I would say, this transition period, this, you know, this chrysalis state before I moved from one thing to another. I'm not too sure if I developed into a butterfly, but it was definitely a moment where I was kind of waiting in the wings to, you know, to avoid a drama cliche, but definitely waiting to start my educational kind of next step. And, you know, it's those moments where you get to a particular certain age and, you know, you were able once to be able to eat as much as you want and have a life that of boundless pleasures, and it didn't really have any effect. And then you got to a certain age, you went crikey, I think time is taking its toll. So I downloaded, probably like many people, downloaded the Couch to 5K app and just committed to it a little bit, really. And, you know, I was working from home. I didn't really have a great deal of time constraints. So I made time every day to go and run a little bit more than I had walked the previous day, and so on and so forth. And then that was it. It just became a part of my day. You know, consequently, you get healthier and you get fitter and you manage to take on more challenges. And so I've, you know, from half marathons to marathons to ultra marathons, I consider myself a runner. And actually, as I, you know, went through, you know, and I continue to go through my, you know, day-to-day business and my journey as an educator and a leader and also a learner as well, having that as a part of my daily routine or my, you know, as much as I can within a week, I think keeps me focused and keeps me very much in the better place, I think, you know, both mentally and physically. You know, in such a job which at the moment has a lot of pressure, I think it's nice to have that. And going back to the article, you know, it was really based on that, the kind of the saying of, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. And actually, you know, as a leader and as teachers as well, you know, we all have responsibilities to make sure that we're supporting other people, that you can't do that whilst running on empty. You can't do that, you know, being a husk of yourself. You know, you do need to prioritize you to be a better leader and to be a better employee or be a better, you know, teacher. You know, it's important that actually we prioritize ourselves. And some people see it as selfish. Some people say, well, actually, no, I've got to do this. But actually, you can't, you know, you can't keep doing the day-to-day business without thinking about, you know, the engine or the vehicle that's doing that. And actually keeping on top of yourself and making sure that you prioritize your self-care is so important. And I think sometimes as educators, we feel guilty of prioritizing that. And I know in, you know, family units, you know, as families or, you know, as parents, you know, it's not us that comes first. But actually, if we don't put ourselves first, you know, on a regular basis or just a little bit each day, you know, I think there's always a problem there that it actually, if you don't think about yourself, you're at risk of not fulfilling what you need to do.
I think the difficult thing is that so many teachers and leaders are so busy and feel like there is so much work to do that they don't have time to do it. I was reading a tweet, it's probably a few months ago now, from a girl who was saying she doesn't have time, she wants to go to the gym, but she just doesn't have time to do it. And she was asking for advice on how she can squeeze the time in. And you talking in that blog about whether it's knitting or whether it's going to the gym or whether it's anything that you do, but where do we find the time for it? How do you prioritize that when you've probably got a million other things to do?
I think there's two ways of looking at this. And I look at it firstly, one as an individual, but also one as a leader of a school. So if I look at it firstly as an individual, It's really important just to find that time. And I know that everybody has their pressures. You know, people have young families, people have very different families that, you know, that they have to deal with, or maybe carers for other people. And it is hard. It is hard. And I think, you know, teachers, well, any educator or any teacher, any part of their career, it's never a fixed moment that will always remain. You know, sometimes it can't be every Monday evening is what I'm going to do, because you know the job is so flexible. I mean, you have to be flexible to meet its demands. But I think it's always just being aware that actually, for us to be the best that we can be, we do need to make sure that time is there, and prioritize that as much as we prioritize our planning or our marking, you know, or our workload. Because I know we talk about the work-life balance, and I think sometimes that's, you know, there's equally a responsibility for the culture of the school that you work with to manage that. But it's also about us as well on the other side of things, you know, making sure that we're trying to work out how it, you know, how to work, you know, when we leave school, and how we manage our own routines. And I speak to a lot of NQTs, you know, they do, and it's important, you know, and NQTs are very, when they start that first year, it is very hard to work out what to do first, you know. And I like to think that we offer a great deal of support for our NQTs, that it is just, you have to see what works. And, you know, before I became, you know, working in senior leadership, you know, I always took it upon myself that I would stay at school for a certain amount of time, I would get home, I would have some time away, you know, go for a run, have my meal, and then I would start work. So work wouldn't disappear, you know, it would always be on the evening agenda. But I realized that I needed a break between it, so I didn't feel that I was coming back from home, working until 10 o'clock and having my downtime then, and going, well, that's the evening gone, and I, you know, to feel slightly jaded about it. So I was always trying to make sure that maybe three times or four times in a week, I would come home from school, leave the books, leave the marking, leave the planning, leave the laptop, go for a run, and then work. And I think, as you know, as a teacher, as you improve your practice, I think you find, you know, you find not shortcuts, but ways of doing things which are far more effective. And I think now, you know, when we have conversations about marking and feedback, you know, about live marking, and I know it's very different in the situation that we're facing within the classroom, about making sure that we're not in too much contact with children, but that live marking and peer marking and all of those assessment methods that actually not only empower children to understand their learning and what they need to do next, but also alleviate some of that burden that we have, you know, when the children leave. As a leader, I think it's our responsibility to make sure that, probably now more than ever, we're looking at our systems and procedures and policies within school and actually wondering, am I getting the best out of my team? And am I giving them the opportunities to recharge? Am I creating onerous structures within school which I'm not listening to, and actually seeing teachers under stress? And that's really important. So as a leader, I have a responsibility to make sure I feel that we consult with our staff, we see what's working, you know, we have a collective voice about, you know, what if we tried this, what if we did this differently. And it's not something, you know, big decisions like that, I don't feel that should come immediately from me. So having that consultative kind of approach and looking at how we do things, and really, does it make the boat go faster? I hope reduces the kind of the work, like, you know, it improves the work-life balance of our staff.
I think
And
it's
I think,
difficult as a leader, isn't it? Because we want to, and I don't think any leader would say they don't want to improve, that they're not in the business of improving life chances for young people. And often there are lots of things as a leader that you would like to do in your school. You can think of all these initiatives, and sometimes in your own excitement as a leader, you can end up putting a lot of pressure on your staff. And I think what you're saying there is that it's really important to consider before you implement any of these, you know, they might be fantastic ideas and they might have the potential to work really well, but if they're going to have an impact on the well-being of your staff, they're not going to work anyway, are they? So I think what you're saying there is about how you involve staff in working out what the impact will be and whether it's sustainable before you actually start to implement some of the things that you want to do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I'm not too far out of the classroom. I'm only, I'm a relatively young in my headship journey, as it were, not age-wise, but my infancy and my journey in headship. But I think for me is, I think if people to feel valued is that they need to feel heard. And there's lots of conversations about improving marking and feedback and reducing the teacher workload when that, when that document came in from Ofsted and we're changing the, and changing the framework. And it's something that, I don't feel that leaders can do as, independently. There has to be a conversation. And I remember, going into our staff and saying, right, okay, what if we got rid of marking? What would it look like? What would it feel like? And the conversations that we had from that were things that I would have never thought about because I'm not in the classroom on a day-to-day basis. As much as I, know my school, and as much as I do know my school, what it's like for my year three, four teacher to my year one teacher to my EYFS staff, they're conversations that are really, really important and of great significant value when you're making decisions for the school, because not only does it give you an informed opinion, but it also makes people feel a part of the process. And if we're not making people feel part of the process, I think we're at danger of doing that. So no, consultation I think is a really, really big thing. And I think, especially with the changes that we've had to face since the schools have reopened in September, about how we do things in the safest way possible. We've tried to consult with staff, and as a trust, we've agreed to consult with staff on a fortnightly basis, just to get a sense of, how are we? How are we getting on in all of this? And do we need to change anything? And that's been really positive because, we've managed to look at staff meetings differently and how we, run CPD. It's all, very different, but I feel that it's working because we consulted and we listened. And actually, it's not a decision that's been made on high and passed down. It's actually evolved by all of us really listening and talking and being a team.
Yeah, I think this might be the point for you to tell us about repositioning the donuts. Before we find out exactly what repositioning the donuts means, I just want to share with you a little bit of information about our partner, headteacherchat.com. Headteacherchat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Headteacherchat is to support headteachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Headteacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Headteacher Chat, it's what headteachers are talking about. Now let's get back to Dan and find out what repositioning the donuts actually means.
Yes.
Because you've also, I absolutely love your use of metaphors. I suppose as an English teacher, I do have an appreciation for a metaphor, but you are, very, very effective at using metaphors to describe
So,
situations.
so
So
for me, I mean, we've been speaking a lot about well-being and staff culture. And I think for me, one of the things that I think well-being is really, really important, and this is not, but it's about making sure that well-being is right and well-being is really reconsidered. I think sometimes well-being can be misinterpreted as sort of tokenistic gestures, and I read it right in my blog, treats on a Friday of, we'll get through it and pats on the back and all of those things. And I think there's a real time and a place for that. And I think now, when teachers are feeling more pressure than others, those just kind gestures, those little gifts, those little things are really, really important because, teachers and leaders, everybody working in education at the moment is under a great deal of pressure. But I think what I try to get through at the bottom of the article is the fact is that if, as leaders, we are rewarding staff because they're feeling, we're noticing that they're feeling overworked or undervalued, or we're noticing that actually, you know, the systems are really, really difficult, then it's actually our job that well-being is about support, looking at policies, procedures, and making sure that our organizational structures have well-being running through them. So rather than actually thinking, okay, well-being is actually, you know, I try to put it as confirmative well-being, that you're confirming that things are quite tough, and therefore we kind of offer something to say, well, thank you, but also kind of as an acknowledgement that it is tough. We really should be thinking about why things are hard, why things are difficult, why we're seeing staff, you know, browbeaten. Because if we can consider well-being in every decision we make, you know, from all of the steps that we take in school, for me, that's the most important thing, really.
I think that actually really shines a light on this idea that I think some schools where you talk about tokenism, and I think those things are done with the best of intentions to you know, a bar of chocolate or whatever it might be. But the key thing that you've said there is the idea of, if you're thanking staff for working in the tough conditions, as leaders, you need to say, right, let's work out what we can do now to make those conditions more manageable. Because working in school, it's pressured and it's difficult, and there is a huge workload that goes with it. But if you can, I don't like to use the word necessarily empower staff, because it suggests that you have some power that you're giving to them, and I'm not sure about that transaction. But if you can, it's like you filling their cup, isn't it? So what do you do in your school, or what have you done? And then I know it's not a one size fits all, and it's about the culture in your individual school, but what have you done to support the well-being of your staff and to create that culture?
I think one of the most important things that we've tried to do all the way through is to lead with humanity. And regardless of the positions we have within the school, we're all human. You know, we just wear a very, very different tag. You know, I have a badge that says principal, and I have a set of responsibilities and duties that I have to undertake, you know, and that goes from every member of staff. I think we consult. I think we like to think that we talk and we listen. I think as well, it's about making sure that people have a really clear set of responsibilities, that people feel empowered, people know where success is. And it's just like, you know, when we talk to children about success criteria and what it looks like when we're having success, I think we can do the same with staff. And we sit down and we talk about, you know, what is it that you want to achieve? So that's, you know, performance, you know, kind of performance development and performance management. But I think most importantly is I think there's certain things that you do which are systematic and policy and procedure led, you know, the way that we try and develop a culture in the school. And that in turn kind of rubs off. So, I mean, when I got to the school, you know, I made it very, very clear that I would take responsibility. You know, I would kind of carry the can, as it were, and, you know, any decisions, I wanted to take that away from staff to say that, you know, I've got everybody's back, and if I make the, you know, the wrong decision, then so be it to me. And I think over time, you know, we've really, again, it's that thing of, you know, when we speak to children and when we kind of give really good instructions to children, I know this sounds a bit kind of strange, but, you know, when you set children on a task, it's really important that you sort of give them, you know, what you want at the end of that time, when you want it to be completed by, you know, why you want it, how it's going to look. And actually, and if you can get all of those things right, children kind of will go off and learn and go, okay, well, I feel really confident that the constraints of my role at this moment in time when I'm learning are really there. And I know what I can, I know what I've got to do. I know how long I've got to do it. I know what I'm, you know, what it's going to look like when I get there. And I think that transparency about roles in schools is also really important to staff, that everybody knows that this is what my role is and this is what it's going to look like when I'm really successful. And I will know how, when I'm really successful, because we try and have a culture of sharing success and being very open and honest about that. And I think hopefully that's had a had an impact. But also as well, it's about thanking people. And, you know, we have, you know, back pre-COVID, you know, we used to have, you know, we removed some of our briefings. So we didn't have a briefing, you know, traditional briefing on a Friday. What we did was our Friday thank yous, where everybody came into the, you know, the staff room, and people came if they wanted to. It wasn't anything that they had to attend, but it was a case of where we would all say thank you to someone that's helped them throughout the week. So, you know, that went from, you know, me thanking, you know, all manner of staff, and then it might have been one of our teaching assistants thanking another teacher, or, but it was an open platform to share thanks and to actually acknowledge that, you know, these small things that people do every day above and beyond the, what they, you know, what they do in their duties, it gave people the opportunity to thank each other and to get together and to recognize that. And after a while, that kind of became part of our culture. And, you know, I think we're a happy team, and I think when people come in, they say, you know, you can really see the team develop and the smiles that take place in the corridor. You know, there are always tough times, but I think, and this term has been, you know, like any other term, it's been very tough, but, you know, as a team, I feel that we're getting there.
It's really interesting that you say that. I was listening to a podcast, the Brené Brown podcast. I think it might be called Dare to Lead, and she interviews, I can't even remember who it is now, I need to find out and then I can tell people, because it's a great podcast. And the man on the podcast talks about leading with humanity, and he has three pillars, and you've talked about two of them, and I can't for the life of me remember the third one, but thanks and gratitude was the first pillar, and talking was the second pillar. And you've talked there about listening to staff and taking on board what they're saying. When it comes to talking to staff, how have you created an open culture in your school so that staff feel like they can be open and honest and communicate with each other?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard. I mean, I always remember when I first came into headship, or I became a teacher, you know, or started any role, I had to lead with authenticity, and I had to lead with kind of, you know, that sense of this is me. You know, I couldn't, you're exhausted, you know, trying to put on what you think a persona of a leader or a head teacher is. And I think you've just got to kind of realize that actually, if I'm just myself, this will be the best way forward. And I feel that, you know, when I'm in school, I'm pretty much the person that I am outside of school, you know, into with some respects, you know. And I always say to staff, you know, I always, even little things like just keeping my room door open, people can come in at any time and have a chat, you know, so those things come from me. And I think as well, one of the most important things that I've done this term is, and I want to do this more with teachers, but obviously with time constraints and making sure that we're following all kind of COVID guidelines, that some of the best conversations I've had is making sure that I have a weekly half an hour with every member of either the senior leadership team or the middle leadership team, and to have half an hour to an hour with them every week, not at the end of the day, you know, during the school day, yeah, where we can walk around, we can talk and look at the school as we do it. Because I think sometimes the pressure on middle leaders and leaders is they have a huge amount of work to do, but also carry a full teaching timetable, you know, as a commitment to that. So actually giving them time to say, right, we're going to have an hour, let's talk through your to-do list, let's go and walk around the school while we can do it. Maybe if we see people who might be interested in taking on that role or doing that task for us together, we can have those conversations. So that's been really, really useful. Also as well, I think one of the things that I found, you know, making sure that people can talk, is trying to be really flexible with leadership time. So I think some of the kind of the sometimes the we can give leaders the same time every day, you know, you've got or every week you've got Monday afternoon, every Monday afternoon that's your leadership time, you know. Yeah. And that's great, but if you're leading maths, Monday afternoon is pretty tough if you want to go out and maybe see a load of math lessons or to do some, you know, pupil voice around maths or anything like that. So what we've tried to do is, okay, you you tell me when you want to have your time out. So people are a bit more flexible with what they want. They don't feel that they're constrained to one particular part of the day or the part of the school week. So leaders might say to me, look, I really need the first, you know, four afternoons out or the first four mornings out. I want to do some extensive work, looking at my subject. I want to go out and talk to people. I want to be in that moment. We'll make it happen and we'll make it, you know, we'll make sure that we cover it. And if that's me covering that class to allow them to do it or another member of staff, it's just kind of the unwritten that that's how it works, because you know, people need to feel confident to do their job. So we do talk a lot. We do try to make sure that we're consulting. And like I say, being able to sort of say, look, I've got a problem. I need some help. And over time, it's just evolved to be part of our culture, really.
It's interesting that you say that, because one of my questions was going to be, and if you have a member of staff who's struggling, what do you do to support them in terms of their well-being?
I think we try and do everything we possibly can. And if we have to, you know, school is a very movable feast, isn't it? At some points, you know, certain classes are going to have a great time and then they're not. And then there might be something that's happened in that year group or that class that's going to, you know, change things. And, you know, even over this term, we've had to be really flexible. We've had to deploy people where they need support. And I think where structures, school structures can be really, when you say, right, this is our school structure, you know, that's great. However, what happens when you need to deal with a crisis or a challenge, or, you know, a new child arrives to school and it's changed the dynamic of a classroom? You have to be, you have to be really supportive of that and to be flexible. And I think one of the things, again, that we've learned is the fact is that we're not, you know, teachers obviously remain, but any additional support staff is the fact that we're flexible. We move around and we support learning rather than we support teachers. So, you know, the idea of a teaching assistant is about now supporting learning and moving forward. So people have moved from year group to year group, and, you know, it's about where we are at the moment.
It's interesting that you talk about flexibility, because often I think flexibility has been something that has been often difficult for leaders in schools because of the constraints that you're working within with the school day, and like you're saying, the structures that you have in place. And I know you did you recently did an Education Without Borders conference, and it was about what we've learned from 2020, and I was going to ask you about that. And I wonder whether one of the things that we have learned from 2020 is that we can be more flexible. You know, schools have really had to embrace different ways of doing things, haven't they? Staggered start times, staggered lunches, break times, things that potentially, and I've said this before on the podcast, in the past we would have said absolutely there's just no way we can do that, but because we've had this situation forced upon us, we've had to be more creative and we've had to take a more flexible approach. So I wonder if you think that's one of the things that we've learned from 2020, and whether you could tell us about some of the other things that you think we've learned from 2020 as leaders and teachers.
I think that one of the things that we have learned and is we have a real opportunity, or what we can learn from it is we have a real opportunity to really think about what education looks like. And I think, you know, it would be a great shame to go through all of this, to go through all the challenges and the new pressures that we've gone through, and not take anything from it as a profession and as a sector. I think one of the things that, you know, it gives us the opportunity to recognize is, you know, learning can look very different. I think, you know, some of the constraints that possibly that we've put in our classrooms, you know, like timetables and you know, having a fixed time to do things, you know, possibly they're things that we can look at and change, because, you know, we have looked at, you know, different models, especially that's probably come through remote learning. And I know that's not a perfect offer by any stretch of the imagination, and we've still got a long way to go as a profession, but we're definitely going there. So for me, it's the fact is that probably not what we have learned yet, but it's what we can learn from it. And I think there needs to be a discussion. You know, I do hope that when we kind of go through this, and I'd love to think that, you know, as profession, someone leads a consultation of, you know, what is it that we got out of that? You know, what were the things that actually, you know, as much as the hardship and as much as the, you know, the massive shift to being really operational leaders and moving away from a strategy of things, you know, what is it we got out of it? And, you know, if it is the fact that it's just great to have 1 year group at a time on the playground at break time and dinner time, you know, so be it. But I think there's going to be deeper things that we'll get out of that. And I think a lot of them will be about, you know, definitely about learning and what learning looks like in the classroom. And I think there's conversations there around our role as teachers and if we move towards a culture of where children have that sense of real independence in the classroom, and they might not follow our timetable but follow their timetable of learning. And, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, children will be maybe set a number of tasks across the day and we facilitate them to achieve those rather than being, you know, that regimented structure. So, you know, maybe there's possibilities there. I also think as well, it's made us really think about work-life balance for staff. And looking at that additional kind of directed time and how best we use that, especially in schools. And are there meetings that we have which we're only there because they've historically been put in place as meetings? And so I think we've got a lot to learn. I think there'll be a lot taking out of it. I just think it's how brave we are in what decisions and what discussions we have. Because I think, if anything, you know, we have at the moment, you know, very, very, you know, education system, which is very still set on the kind of the classrooms of the Victorian era. You know, we have and we've gone back to that now with our rows.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot to take from it. And I think what we've got to do is really investigate and have a bit of a review. I think it'd be very interesting to have an educational review of, you know, hopefully a post-COVID educational review of maybe each sector. And say, okay, what did we get out of that?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, we're talking, or, you know, we can start seeing this year about assessments at Key Stage 2 and at Key Stage 1, and whether they're published data and all of those things. And maybe, just maybe, we're starting to.
And that probably needs to happen at different levels, doesn't it? And if it doesn't happen on a macrocosmic level, then let's do it in our own schools. You know, head teachers, let's have a look what the opportunities are. This links really nicely into your other blog that I read, There Are Stars to Spot, in which you are just so optimistic about the future. You seem to have, you know, I think a lot of head teachers have reached a point where they're just so jaded at the minute and so tired, but you seem to have so much positivity. You don't strike me as someone who's been through the most hellish term since education began, and you seem to have that real sense of positivity and optimism, and that really came through in the blog that you wrote.
I think for me, you know, it has been a challenging term, and, you know, I think for everybody working in education, the fact that, you know, that mantra of just keep standing up, you know, it's been really key, because we've just had to go through it. We've just had to deal with it. I mean, I've been very lucky, you know, and I know that every schools are different. You know, I feel very supported by senior leadership team. I feel very supported as a leader by my team and my staff, and I feel that the community we have within our school community, from our parents as well, I felt very supportive, you know, throughout all of that. And I think one of the things I felt that's come out of that is just trying to be as transparent as possible with our parental community throughout all of this, making sure that we didn't leave a vacuum during lockdown for, you know, social media to fill in the blanks of information. So we did a lot of work over, like most schools, you know, did a lot of work over the lockdown period to make sure that we were present, to make sure that we were being there, either, you know, on a Facebook group or through our Twitter, or just to make sure that we were filling that void of what possibly could be. That, you know, we wanted to make sure our community was still, you know, interconnecting and engaging. Yeah. But no, I think for me, you know, with every challenge, it gives us the opportunity to see the positive. And, you know, I make a reference to the fact is, you know, in regards to stars, you know, that you know, supernovas are a star that kind of burn brighter than the other, and they, once they explode, you know, very much like, you know, the situation that we're in, you know, supernovas, you can't see them as stars coming on the horizon. They just appear and then they explode, and the light that they give, you know, lasts a long while after that they're there. So theoretically, you know, I tried to make a very, probably, I don't know whether it worked, but a metaphor that, you know, obviously this pandemic wasn't there. We didn't see it on the horizon. It has kind of, you know, grown and it has kind of taken over it. But I think in the time that, you know, and the legacy that it will leave and the light that it will leave in the sky afterwards, hopefully should give us the opportunity to sort of navigate our way back to maybe where we went, or maybe to a different path afterwards, really. So I suppose it's trying to, you know, it's trying to find the good in things, I suppose, is the most important thing. And, you know, and I think as the school communities, we've had really tough challenges. You know, we see members of staff affected by this, and personal, you know, family, you know, school, you know, school and families and all of those things affected by this. And we're going to see that for a long time coming. It's not something which is going to go away soon. But I suppose it's that, just that, I think what keeps you going and keeps you going through those hard times and the tough challenges is we've got to get something good out of this. We've got to get something good out of it. So I think for me, it's a positivity, not that this is a positive moment in time, but there's the positivity is about what could be in the future and where we go next.
And it's interesting as well to think that whenever this may be, we do go back to normal, that we will be able to value things that previously we took for granted, and it might give us more of a sense of gratitude and appreciation for some of the smaller things that we never really bothered or we never really thought about before, potentially.
No, definitely. And I think, you know, the one of the things that we're missing at the moment are, you know, I'd probably say this for me personally, but our staff and our family and our pupils is our assemblies. And I know that it sounds like a really simple thing, but just our Friday assembly that we just love. And we call it the Fabulous Fancy Friday Assembly, and we have a big Fabulous Fancy Friday breakfast, and we do lots of singing, and it's a bit bonkers, but it's really, really good fun. And it's just something that's 30 minutes of our school culture that we just can't wait to have back.
Yeah.
And we do take it for granted.
We will get those things back, won't we?
Oh, yes, definitely.
We just don't know. We just, at the moment, don't know when that will be.
No, but when they will, they'll be the things that go, oh, it's nice to be back in the assembly, or it's nice to be back doing these things, you know, that we could possibly do before.
Yeah. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, I sometimes
end with, what one tip would you give to a head teacher in terms of helping them to develop a well-being culture in their school? And I think I'd like to ask you that question. What if you could just give one tip to leaders and head teachers, what would you say?
I think it's got something to do with the fact is, don't feel pressured to have all the answers. You know, no one's expecting you to have all the answers. And actually the answers to the toughest questions might not lie with you. They might lie with the dinner lady or the person who midday supervisor. She might have the best answer for break time.
Yeah.
You know, your young, you know, your NQT in year three, she might have the better answer.
Yeah.
About marking. Your year one teacher that you might not have had much conversation with, she might be able to tell you the best way to do phonics. You know, it's that. Don't feel like you have to have all the answers.
That's brilliant. That links to something you were saying before when you talked about being your authentic self. And I think to do that, you have to show some vulnerability, and to admit or to accept that you don't have all the answers is about showing your vulnerability, isn't it? And being prepared to say to people, I don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to.
Many times, you know, people have come to me and go, what should we do? And go, I don't know.
You tell me.
What should we do? What do we do? Because I've never been, and I think the situation that we're in now at the moment, you know, where, because it's so, you know, day to day, and sometimes there's things which are just going to just happen with the pandemic. You know, people go, what should we do?
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. And, you know, I think even when, with parents as well, I think we've been as transparent as possible when we go, you know, what do you think will happen? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But you know what? When I do know, you'll be the first to know, and we'll try and make it as clear and as understandable as possible for everybody. And I think that's the most important thing. If you lead with humanity, acknowledge your areas for development, acknowledge the fact that you don't have all the answers all the time, but just lead people together, keep everybody with you, keep your parents on board, keep everybody together, keep them safe, and you know, you're the one that's be the one to stick your head above the parapet, then you can do it. But yeah, I think you're a leader, you're not a genius.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much. If people want to find you, if they want to read your blog or they want to engage with you on Twitter, how can they do that?
Well, I suppose the first thing is that it would be lovely for people to have a look at our school, which is at Woodstock Acad, short for Woodstock Primary Academy. My Twitter is DanEdwards_77, and my blog is Leading in the Now. So yeah, it'd be lovely to talk to people. And again, you know, it's just nice. I think, you know, as educators, you know, it's important that we talk about our profession and talk up our profession. I think sometimes as educators, we feel that it's not our way. But, you know, if you worked in medicine or if you worked in a different profession, you'd be delivering papers on a particular, you know, strategy or a new way of doing things. So I think as educators, you know, we have a lot to say about what we do. So, you know, let's amplify what we do and share our good practice.
And that's one of the reasons that I set up the podcast to do just that, and to allow for this type of sharing. So thank you very much. Hopefully we can speak again in the future.
Definitely. Be a real treat. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Take care, Dan.
Take care.
So I want to say a big thank you to Dan for that interview. It goes to show that you can develop a love for running. Dan, as I said before, he progressed from not being a runner to being an ultra runner, and it's 5 marathons in 5 days. So, I mean, I'm not saying that you should become an ultra runner. However, speaking to Dan, it shows that you shouldn't be frightened of starting to introduce or reintroduce exercise into your life, or to prioritise exercise, because it is so important to well-being. I mean, well-being encompasses so many different facets, but mental well-being and physical well-being are two of the major aspects. And exercise is the key to your physical well-being. I'm not saying go out running, but try to introduce some form of exercise into your life. I think Dan also really stresses the importance of self-care, or self-compassion as I prefer to call it, and how that's so vital to our well-being. And, you know, that does include looking after your physical as well as your mental health, taking care of yourself, looking after your body, looking after your mind as well. And don't feel guilty for putting yourself and your health first, because you come first. And like Dan says, your cup has to be full. You can't look after other people if you aren't well yourself. Dan shared some really useful ideas in the podcast about how you can plan your schedule so that you can find that time for yourself. And I think if you take some of those things on board, he's talking about planning on a weekly basis and keeping that plan flexible, but knowing when you've got opportunities to fit your exercise in, and also just being really focused on prioritizing the exercise, making it an important part of your schedule. Dan also talks about Thank You Friday, and in the interview I couldn't quite come up with what the three pillars were that I was talking about, and it's a guy called Eric Mosley, and I listened to him on a Brené Brown interview called Dare to Lead, a podcast I would highly recommend, by the way. And he has started the Work Human movement, which is a more humanistic approach to leadership, and the three pillars of that movement are thank, talk and celebrate. And if you want to learn more about the Work Human movement, you can find more out about it at workhuman.com, or as I say, listen to the Brené Brown Dare to Lead podcast. Once again, thank you to Dan for some amazing insights, for his unbounded optimism and positivity. Once again, another head who I would have loved to work for. That's all we've got time for today. I have an announcement to make though, so I hope you've listened all the way to the end of the show today, because I have managed to arrange an interview with none other than Drew Povey, who is the head of the school in Educating Greater Manchester. So I really look forward to that interview. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com, and the Teach Well Alliance.